Have you ever had to wait, and were you able to wait patiently? Hello, I'm David Thomas. This is Good Word. I am your host again. This is the last in a series of 13 discussions that I've been having with my colleagues, Daryl Bigger and Brant Berglund, on the subject of restoration. And this week we come to a conclusion of this, and I was interested in this particular concluding lesson because we began many weeks ago by looking at how things were in the beginning, how the world and its existence was pristine. And we've talked about how restoration is taking place and how it should take place. And of course, we all know that that process is not finished. And so this time we're invited to think about what is yet to come. And maybe before we talk about waiting patiently, we should just sketch a minute. Brant, you're a revelation man. How does the story end?
The story ends much like it began, with everything that was made beautiful in the beginning remade beautiful again. The story ends with restoration. The book of Genesis, the book of Revelation are bookends on the story of the fall of man and God's work to redeem and restore.
So what are some of the particulars that Revelation tells us about what the end state will be like?
Well, if we bypass the events that lead up to the end,
yes,
which some of them are not so positive, the concluding picture is that there's no more death, no more crying, no more pain. The former ways of thinking and being are passed away. Everything is made new. And I love new things. I love getting a new tool that works great. I love new ways of thinking or going to places that I've never seen, new experiences. The new earth is where everything that God created perfect in the beginning is remade perfect again.
And so you could say that it's a story of Eden lost to Eden restored, and that the end state, according to the Bible, will be as pristine as the initial state, right?
As pristine, and maybe with some scars. If I think about myself, if I were to be there, would I have scars from my human experience here, or would God take care of those? I don't know an answer to that, but it does say in Revelation 21 that God will wipe away every tear from my eyes.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think it's fair to say that what you have so nicely described there is the hope of Christians. You know, is that Christians are hoping for a day when the process of restoration, which is happening now, will be completed, right? And by the way, that doesn't make Christians pie in the sky by and by people, because Christians are plenty active in the present, but we live with a hope that one day, let's talk a little bit about that, Daryl and Brant. Is it, how is this transition going to take place in its final reality? There's going to be a cataclysm. Is that not right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, destruction of all that is and a restructuring of that, from the ruins, if you will.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued when you talk about the end to think about another chapter in Revelation. That is the 14th chapter, those messages from three angels, the third of which does sound pretty negative and destructive for all those who choose to alienate themselves from God. Here is a description of the ultimate destruction of those people. And then the admonition that this is a call for patient endurance on the part of the saints to endure all of that misery and destruction.
Yeah.
Hang on there.
And we find the same thing in the fifth seal in chapter 6. There are souls under the altar crying out, "How long, O Lord, until you judge and avenge?" And they're given white robes and told, "Wait a little while longer." Ah, waiting. Yeah.
So that brings back Psalms, and a number of Psalms where David is crying out, "How long, O Lord, will you ignore me forever? I'm bathing my bed
Psalm 13,
in tears."
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you guys have set up our question very well. And so how do we wait, and how do we wait patiently? And what should characterize our waiting? And I have to just tell you again, I don't like waiting. You know, I find it very aggravating. Mm-hmm. And I find it most aggravating if I have to wait to pay a bill. Mm. It seems to me that if I owe you money, you should be in a position to accept it when I show up and not make me wait. What about this time of waiting? What can we say? How do we do this, and how do we do it well, and how do we do it happily and patiently and all those things?
Well, I don't know the answer to all those questions, but your analogy brings a thought to my mind, and that is waiting to pay a bill. We don't want to wait to do things. For me, it's often because I don't want to have to keep thinking about them. I want to let go of that idea and get on to something else. And what waiting requires of us is to maintain focus on the hope of what will be.
In fact, that gives the ability to wait a little better when you think how exciting it'll be when this event happens. Hmm. And for the Christian who reads the New Testament, that event culminates or maybe begins to culminate in the coming of Jesus visibly, you know, literally back to earth. And in Matthew 24 and 25, Jesus talks a little bit about that. And he concludes Matthew 24 with a parable of two servants. And he says the master goes off on a journey. He leaves his servants in charge of his household. How should they wait? And they even say, my master has taken a long time. Where is he? Blessed is the one, the servant, whom his master, when he comes, finds taking care of his household. It is the wicked servant who says, oh, my master's delaying. He forgets about his coming, and he begins to get drunk and beat his fellow servants. I think all this quarter we've been talking about restoration. That's part of the work of waiting.
In other words, occupying the time in good ways is one of the ways.
Absolutely.
You know, the lesson invited us to look at Romans 12, verses 11 to 13, and I have it written here. Among other things, there's some advice on waiting. Paul writing said, never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor, serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. So here now he's giving these short, pithy comments about some of the elements that are appropriate while you're waiting. And maybe we should look at that. What does never be lacking in zeal look like, and how would you maintain zeal? See? And I think you alluded to it, perhaps unwittingly, Darrell, that you have to keep alive the promise.
Yes.
You know, it's like a young woman agreed to marry you, but you have to wait for the wedding, and you know you keep that hope alive by thinking forward.
If I purchase something on Amazon, perhaps I recently bought a cyclo computer for my bicycle, and I was looking forward to that, and it was delayed, but looking forward to the joy it would be to actually calculate my miles. I waited every day expectantly for that package.
We Americans are not known in this world for being patient and waiting. No. We want the Amazon package tomorrow if we order it today.
Yeah, as somebody said, we now stand in front of microwaves and tell them to hurry up. You know, whereas our grandmothers used to, or great grandmothers used to, stand in front of a wood stove and cook for 3 hours just to make supper. What does it mean to keep spiritual fervor, and how would you do that? Because there are many stories in the Bible about people whose spiritual fervor faded. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that?
The book of Hebrews is oriented that way to those who were forgetting or sliding back, who were abandoning their original faith, who were losing their excitement. And the author of Hebrews, for him, the solution is to fix your eyes on Jesus and to look a whole lot more at him and how amazing he is and all the wonderful things he's done.
So to keep that hope alive, it keeps spiritual fervor alive, you have to keep the vision alive. Which is one of the main reasons for a devotional experience. And
I think of Jesus' parable of the bridegroom, everybody waiting for him to come, and also the admonition in Hebrews chapter 10 that the community of people being together with others who are waiting, anticipating together, feeding off one another is important. Don't give up meeting together, as is the habit of some.
Yeah, that's a good admonition too. You know, you can't be a homebound Christian. You need to be one who is tied to a community.
In fact, that passage even is helpful here because it says, "And all the more so as you see that day approaching." You know, as the coming of Jesus gets nearer, we ought to be more with our fellow believers.
And Brent, you already talked about serving the Lord. You alluded to that earlier, but it reminded me of a story that I've loved for a long time. It comes from Connecticut, when the Dark Day took place. I think it wasn't the Dark Day in 1833 or something like that. And there was a story that I read when I lived there that intrigued me, because as the sun got darkened, people became afraid. You know, chickens went home to roost. It got very dark in the early afternoon. And a page, a young boy working in the government halls of government came running into the deliberations of the House, and he announced to everybody that it was dark outside, that perhaps the world was ending, and the congressmen, or the whatever they call them, the senators, the representatives, started debating this, well, should we go home? And one man famously said, he says, I don't know what that means out there, but he says, this I do understand, that if this is the sign of the end of the world, I would just as soon the Lord found us working as doing anything else. And they continued on, you know. And so it's a kind of a famous story, at least in that place. So
seems to harmonize well with Matthew 24 there.
I was thinking the same thing, that the list of things that were happening in the days of Noah are common, regular things. That's life as usual.
Be doing good things. I also am intrigued by be joyful in hope. There's a link between hope and joy. What do you think about that?
If you look at the newspaper too much, or watch or look at the internet and look at the news, it's hard to maintain your joy sometimes.
But it does seem that where you have hope, there's room for joy.
Yeah.
Where you have no hope, joy is just hard to have that. And the Christians have a wonderful hope. How about being patient in affliction? As I looked at that verse, that for me was the toughest one. Be patient in affliction.
John records Jesus describing all the trouble people are going to have. You're going to have trouble in this world, but take heart. I have overcome the world, and I'm sharing these things with you so that you'll have peace and comfort.
In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart.
Be of good cheer. And then there's prayer. And I tell you, for me, prayer is a big subject. Be faithful in prayer. And I think prayer is many things. I think the hardest kind of prayer is the one in which we yield to God. And a lot of people don't like to pray that prayer and don't pray that prayer. And it's one that needs to be prayed quite a bit. And then share with those who are in need. I think we've talked about that a lot this quarter. And practice hospitality. I think we don't practice much hospitality compared to years ago.
So you keep investing in the people around you. You share yourself with the community.
Yeah.
I wonder how much rapport we had mentioned, rapport and building confidence. That'll do that.
Yeah.
Spending time with the people.
Yeah. And here, as we run out of time, I want to just throw out one thing from Peter, who challenged Christians of his day with the words, what manner of people ought you to be? While you're waiting, what manner of people ought you to be? And perhaps that's a place where we can think about ending here, that the power of the process of restoration is going on. What manner of people ought we to be? Both inside being transformed and in participating in the lives of the communities and the world in which we live to improve its circumstances. So thank you, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure to work with you for these 13 weeks. My thanks again to David Olson. And my thanks to those of you who listened to The Good Word. We appreciate your interest. For The Good Word, I'm Dave Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.